What's going on, my fellow scientifically curious humans? Earlier this month, President Biden signed an executive order setting a goal that by 2030, half of all cars sold in the U.S. would be hybrid or electric, which made a splash in the news.
Almost every automaker in the world has plans to develop electric vehicles.
A lot of it comes down to charging and the infrastructure. There is a couple billion being set aside to help build out the charging grid.
Tesla continues to be the leader in electric vehicles, aka EVs, but other automakers are catching up.
Boy, did Ford make a big announcement last night. The F-150 Lightning. It is an all-electric pickup truck. It goes on sale next spring.
GMC's going big on electric vehicles. Tuesday night, unveiling its new Hummer EV, one of 20 electric vehicles the manufacturer plans to release by 2023.
But can we get there? Half of all new cars, electric or hybrid, by 2030? Where do things stand today? And if we could achieve that goal, would it really help reduce greenhouse gases? This is Nova Now, where we electrify the science and technology behind the headlines. I'm Alok Patel.
Support for Nova Now comes from the Massachusetts General Hospital Cancer Center, dedicated to providing the latest therapies and cancer specialists who are experienced in your cancer. When you hear the word cancer, their team is ready. Learn more at massgeneral.org/cancer.
You're listening to the sounds of a restored 1914 Model 48 duplex drive Brougham Detroit electric car, now on permanent display at the Union College campus in Schenectady, New York. These days, electric vehicles may seem cutting edge, but they're far from new. The first practical, self-powered, four-wheeled electric carriage in the United States was invented by Scottish chemist William Morrison in 1890 in Des Moines, Iowa. And then the 1900 United States Census tabulated that 28% of all cars produced in America were electric, outselling all other types of cars. But in 1908, Ford introduced the Model T, a mass-produced, gas-powered vehicle that was affordable and widely available, and this put electric cars to sleep. Then in the 1970s, the price of gasoline hit record highs, and the news was buzzing about it.
Oil prices are moving definitely upward. In the Dallas area today, dealers raised prices to more than 40 cents a gallon.
So, the U.S. Department of Energy funded efforts to try and make a cost-effective electric car. But EVs didn't become popular in the 70s. The technology required to give them enough range at a reasonable price wasn't there yet. But today, it is. Biden's 2030 target is part of Build Back Better, his economic plan that aims to position, quote, America to drive the electric vehicle future forward, outcompete China, and tackle the climate crisis, unquote. That climate crisis, a warming world, is caused largely by the burning of fossil fuels, like gasoline, which releases carbon dioxide into our atmosphere where it traps heat. According to the EPA, passenger cars account for about 17% of those emissions. So the question is, could electric cars cut that back sufficiently? And what do we need for them to effectively replace the ones most of us are driving? One of the key developments that's allowing the electric cars of today to compete with the gas-powered cars is batteries.
I think the lithium-ion technology was a real milestone in moving from low-volume demonstration vehicle to high-volume opportunity.
Denise Gray is the president of LG Energy Solution Michigan Incorporated Tech Center. As she points out, the faster and farther you want to drive on electric power, the more power your battery needs to store, without it getting super heavy in the process. The problem for engineers is that no battery stores as much energy per pound as gasoline. But there might be hope, because we've seen batteries get better and more advanced with time.
You think about in a regular vehicle, there's a 12-volt battery in there, and that battery helps to start up the vehicle and to provide the initial support for all the electrical devices in the vehicle.
You know, the radio, the instrument cluster, that thing on the dash with all the lights and indicators. But as the technology has improved, batteries have been able to take over additional functions.
As we see that this battery energy can be also helpful in moving the vehicle from point A to point B. You have a growing in size of the battery. So it goes from the 12-volt battery to, say, in a mild hybrid, a 48-volt battery. And then the next stage is the full hybrid.
Like a Prius, which has an internal combustion engine and an electric motor.
That is a full hybrid, meaning that it's a larger battery. It may give you full electric mobility if you're going at below 25 miles an hour. And then the next battery, again, next battery in size and capacity, maybe it's a 400-volt battery. And now it's a larger battery, like in the Chrysler Pacifica, for example. So now you've got a plug where you can plug it in, and maybe you can go 20, 30, 40 miles on pure electric, depending upon your driving habits. And then the last stage, we call it a full battery electric vehicle.
These are what we call EVs. Think Tesla and the growing number of cars from other companies also hitting the market.
Now the battery is a lot larger, but it now is your sole power device in the vehicle, the energy device that powers the vehicle to move however far you want to go, like in the Mustang Mach-E or in the Chevrolet Bolt. Those are rechargeable. You can plug it in at the end of the day and recharge it for the next driving experience.
Okay, it seems like the whole history of EVs is basically the history of batteries. So let's take a pause and review the basics. Batteries store chemical energy and convert it into electrical energy we can use. And they've been evolving for two centuries using different materials, but they also have the same basic tried and tested design. If you pull a AA battery out of your remote control, you'll see it has two ends, one positive and one negative. Inside the battery, those are called the cathode and the anode. Electrons flow from one to the other, generating an electric current in a controlled way. The key word here is controlled. Remember, an EV battery has to store a lot of chemical energy, right? Which can make them a little volatile if anything goes wrong. Case in point, just last month, this hit the news.
A defective battery inside the car has led to 9-volt fires and prompted GM today to issue its second recall for nearly 69,000 vehicles worldwide.
Investigators determined that the batteries that caught fire had a manufacturing defect, not a design defect. And GM isn't the only one. Ford, BMW, and Hyundai have also had to recall vehicles over fears of battery malfunctions.
We don't design the vehicles to burst into flames. You know, I normally tell my engineers that your child is going to be riding in this vehicle, your grandmother and your grandfather.
Driving and mobility is literally what we do for so much of our daily existence. And I think there's some kind of questions we need to address. I'm the average person. I'm going to be firing questions. Would my electric bill increase significantly if I got an electric vehicle?
Not significantly. It will be increased, but you have to look at it not just from your electric bill, but what you would have been spending if you had an internal combustion engine.
In terms of what you'd pay for gasoline over the lifetime of the vehicle, but also EVs are simpler mechanically than cars with combustion engines, so they require less maintenance. Let's say I'm worried about there being charging stations near me. Like, how do I know if there's going to be charging stations close to me?
There's different companies that are responsible or at least supply these charging stations. And there's apps on my phone now for ChargePoint and where all of its stations are so that I can plot my travels.
ChargePoint advertises itself as the world's leading electric vehicle charging network, with nearly 130,000 public charging locations.
The vehicles are becoming very smart as well, and this is why I'm so excited about these apps being integrated into some of the vehicles that you buy. They also are providing you aids in knowing where to charge, how much charge you have left based on the route you want to go, and where the nearest charging station will be. Charging a vehicle is going to be a behavior. I think as we adopt it to computers and charging them at night, phones. I think we're going to really adapt to learning how to charge our vehicles in a convenient location, be it at work or at home.
You know, another thing that people get lost in the internet, especially when we talk about the environmental impact of these cars, is what happens when the battery's at the end of its life and someone is done with their electric vehicle. You know, are we exchanging one environmental issue with another? Is that a myth? What happens with those batteries?
The first thing is secondary use. What you think about, instead of having a diesel generator, could we have some kind of battery electric backup supply for my home so I don't lose my ice cream in my refrigerator? So I think that this is an area of open opportunity to determine what could be those secondary life of those useful batteries. And then after that secondary life, say now we've got 20 years later, if you will, now recyclability. We're all trying to figure out how to, you know, harvest materials out of the battery cell or recycled and put back into the circle of life. So still a lot of work to be done in that area.
Battery-powered electric vehicles have fewer tailpipe emissions and reduced noise. And like I said, they typically require less maintenance. But will this be enough to get consumers to actually consume them? More on that after the break.
The lowest carbon intensity form of travel you can use is to use your own 2 feet and your legs to walk or ride a bicycle, but that's often not possible.
Jessica Trancic is a professor in the Institute for Data Systems and Society at MIT. She and her team do research on energy and transportation systems, and they've spent years looking for ways to decarbonize energy services.
You know, if we go from hybrid vehicles to electric vehicles, you can think of it as kind of phasing out the internal combustion engine vehicle, and you're starting to rely, you know, solely on the energy that's stored in the battery. And that will come ultimately from, you know, the power grid and the power plants that are supplying electricity.
And that obviously is going to differ depending on what state you're in, right? Like someplace the power grid may come from coal, whereas somewhere else it may come from wind or solar. Am I right when I differentiate it like that?
Yeah, so coal is kind of being phased out for various economic reasons and also because of the high emissions. But it is true that in some places you could be using a little bit more coal and in other places less. So that impacts the emission savings that you get from the battery electric vehicles. But what we see is that just regardless of where you are in the U.S., even with today's power grid, you can save substantially from switching to one of those alternative powertrains.
Alternative powertrain technologies refer to hybrid vehicles, plug-in hybrids, and battery electric vehicles, all of them. Jessica Trancic's team has also been evaluating personal vehicles against climate change mitigation targets. They've examined the costs and carbon intensities of almost all personal vehicles available in the U.S. today.
Yeah, so the carbon intensity is just the greenhouse gas emissions per mile traveled, and that includes all of the emissions that are incurred in building the car, you know, in producing the battery, as well as in the case of gasoline vehicles, in refining the crude oil, and then driving these cars.
Her research group developed the online app Carbon Counter to provide information to consumers who may be considering one of these alternative powertrain technologies. Through the app, you can input the vehicle model you want and see its carbon intensity and how that translates to cost per mile. I played with this app, and it's actually kind of fun. What is one myth you would like to squash about electric vehicles?
Can I give you two?
Please, yeah, give me myths that you want just to smash about electric vehicles.
Yeah, the energy requirements and therefore the greenhouse gas emissions coming from producing the battery are just so large that you don't save emissions in switching to a battery electric vehicle. That is not true.
Okay, good to know. So how much difference does it make?
you can save substantial emissions, 30% or more, in switching to an electric vehicle, even when we take those emissions into account. Now, the second myth is that the environmental and social impacts of mining are unique to battery electric vehicles. And this is a topic that is not unique to battery electric vehicles or to batteries. We use lots of metals. We use a lot of fossil fuels. These are extractive industries, and they can have very negative, environmental and social impacts that are something that we really need to become more focused on, but not specific to electric vehicles, because that's really a distraction.
Okay, these myths are crushed. I don't drive very much at all. I don't even have a car. My wife has a car. I use a bicycle. But I feel like just a few years ago, in driving from Napa to San Francisco, every now and then I would see a Tesla on the side of the road. And that has added to this range anxiety. And so, the fear that a vehicle has insufficient range to reach its destination and could strand its occupants on the side of the street when the battery dies. You've studied this for years. So I wanted to ask you, as the expert here, is range anxiety justified given cars and our charging infrastructure?
It's mostly an outdated fear, I would say. If you're using an electric vehicle, even for the lower cost electric vehicle models, and especially if you have a reliable place to charge it, then upwards of 95% of days, you wouldn't have to recharge during the day.
A lot of strides have been made within the last decade.
Here again is Denise Gray.
We went from batteries in vehicles that can get you maybe 60 to 80 miles to today's vehicles that are giving you over 300 miles. I've only run out of gas from an internal combustion engine once. And once you do that, you don't do it again. And I think same thing with a battery electric vehicle. If I am looking at my dashboard and is saying coming empty soon, if you don't do that, the same thing will happen. You'll be on the side of the road and you've got to call someone to tow your vehicle or bring a portable charger to be able to give you some juice. Same kind of thought process.
There is this anxiety that comes from getting into this kind of unknown situation.
Back to Jessica Trancic.
But once people do it, the reports you'll hear from many different electric vehicle owners is that they are able to find places to charge. Now, unless you know where you're going to be able to recharge, then you're probably not going to buy an electric vehicle.
Trancic says most people on most days are not driving any farther than the maximum range allowed by EVs available today.
But there's going to be a small number of days throughout the year where they may travel further. And those are what we call the high energy days. And so it's really important to find ways to charge vehicles and sort of have these predictable, reliable locations for charging conveniently on those days. There are definitely pockets that are deficient in charging stations. But there are plans to expand charging infrastructure.
Last week, the U.S. Senate approved a $1 trillion bipartisan infrastructure bill that includes $7.5 billion to fund the installation of electric vehicle charging stations across the country. The bill still needs to pass the House, where it faces an uphill battle.
As more models become available, there's going to be a natural process of expanding charging infrastructure. And there's also government policy that's being discussed, for incentivizing that process. But the availability is pretty uneven at this point.
I'm glad you brought up government infrastructure and us trying to create a more equitable world when it comes to electric vehicles and charging stations. I just wanted to ask you, what's it going to take for battery electric vehicles to become like a widespread option?
There's a few different steps that need to be taken. So one is to accelerate the process and allow more consumers to adopt electric vehicles. It's really important to put the information out there for where can you predictably and reliably charge. The second is to make more electric vehicle models available to people. People like to have choice. We also need more electric vehicle models at the lower price points. And then the third is expanding charging infrastructure, but it's not about just haphazardly putting charging infrastructure in various places. if we really focus on providing charging at home and then also a couple other key locations, including fast charging along highways and long rural roads, workplace charging, which can really help the power grid, and then overnight locations like hotels, you know, that is like a strategic package of charging locations that would allow people to charge their vehicles very conveniently. And on most days, you won't even have to think about whether you have the charge or the fuel left in your vehicle to take you where you want to go. You know, in terms of who will do all this, ideally, it's going to be a combination of government policy incentives and then private sector innovation. And this can sort of build up into a positive feedback loop that can actually bring about quite rapid change. And you could even get to a point where electric vehicles are an asset for the power grid, you know, where on some days they could act as storage, you know, kind of acting as batteries for the power grid. But that's something that we're a little bit further from, but it's a really interesting opportunity to look into.
There's a lot to look into. For the consumer, it's driving habits, budget, and well, what type of ride suits your fancy. And with engineers and scientists continuing to improve these vehicles and their batteries, we may all, one day, be able to drive on to a greener, less carbon-intense future. I'll vroom vroom to that. Well, I probably shouldn't say vroom vroom because I think electric cars are supposed to be more silent, but you get the point. Nova Now is a production of GBH and PRX. It's produced by Terrence Bernardo, Ari Daniel, Jocelyn Gonzalez, Isabel Hibbard, Sandra Lopez Monsalve, and Rosalyn Tordesillas. Julia Court and Chris Schmidt are the co-executive producers of Nova. Suki Bennett is senior digital editor. Christina Monin is associate researcher. Robin Kasmer is science editor. And Devin Robbins is managing producer of podcasts at GBH. Our theme music, which always charges me up, is by DJ Kid Koala. I'm Alok Patel. We'll be back in 2 weeks, which is enough time for you to read up on the engineering marvels of all the electric vehicles out there, like the BMW i3, Hyundai Kona Electric, Jaguar I-Pace, Kia Niro EV, Nissan Leaf, Volvo XC40, Recharge, the Audi e-tron Sportback, the Tesla Model 3, S, X, or Y. Or maybe you'll be like me, live in a city and not have a car at all and cruise around on a bicycle.
GBH.